Welcome to PFT Live, Monday, June 16, 2014. It shouldn't look any different, but it's very different from my perspective. After 3.5 years of sitting in the same spot, which was actually my office, my old house, where I would actually work all day and then just look up when the time came and press on the lights, hit the right button for this show and for Pro Football Talk on NBCSN, I now have a separate area where I come and I sit, and it's bigger. And there's a little echo that we're dealing with, but it should look the same, and eventually it will sound the same, but this is still the same program, PFT Live, and same situation for 49ers tight end Vernon Davis, although it's really not clear what he plans to do. Last week he said he plans to show up for a mandatory 3-day minicamp, and now it seems like he won't be showing up. From a financial standpoint, it's no surprise if he doesn't show up. He's already given up $200,000. In workout bonuses by staying away from the offseason program. If he stays away from the 3-day minicamp, he loses up to $70,000 in fines. The question really becomes, how committed is he to his quest for a new contract? And he's finally admitted in an item for the MMQB.com, sitting in for Peter King. Peter King takes his annual vacation. He gets people to come in and write the column. And the first thing Davis talks about is why he's holding out. And even though he previously was coy about the holdout, saying it's not about getting a new deal, it's about building his brand, and that's part of this whole Fantech stock thing that he's doing. You notice I said thing instead of scam, although I personally believe it's a scam both for the player and for the investors, for everyone except Fantech, which is making money off of every transaction. Regardless, what was my point? My point is Davis trying to make his point by staying away to get that new contract, and that's the only leverage a player has. When you're under contract or not under contract, withhold services. Now, some would say that Vernon Davis should honor his contract because he took the signing bonus money and the other guaranteed money when he signed his 5-year extension back in 2010. But the reality is there are devices available under the CBA for players to withhold services even if they are violating their contracts. If they're willing to forfeit the bonus money, if they're willing to incur the fines, if they're willing to do whatever needs to be done, even if it ultimately means forfeiting salary by not showing up for regular season games. That's how you get the team's attention, and that's how you get what you think you deserve if you think you deserve a new contract. You only have so many years when you can play at the NFL level. So, look, as I've said time and again, the people who own the NFL teams didn't get there by not using any and all leverage that they had in any and every business setting. That's what Vernon Davis is doing here. Whether it's successful, we'll see. Whether he's truly committed to the point of staying away from training camp, we'll see. Whether someone eventually blinks, like Maurice Jones-Drew did a couple of years ago when he held out for an extended period of training camp before showing up in Jacksonville, we'll see. We'll see also applies to Texans receiver Andre Johnson. Now, Johnson is in a very different situation from Vernon Davis. The Texans are more than willing to pay Johnson $10 million this year, even he creeps deeper and deeper into his 30s. But he's apparently upset because of the direction of the team. He's sick of winning. He's been with that team since 1 year after it entered the league, a couple of playoff appearances in 2011 and 2012, and now the team seems to be going in a dramatically different direction. I know some people think that last season was an aberration for the Texans. I look at that team now, and I think it's the start of a trend, and it's a troubling trend, and when your quarterback options are Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tom Savage, T.J. Yates, and Case Keenum, it's not a good sign for the prospect of the team turning things around. And that's what Andre Johnson apparently is sick of. Now, the question is, how committed is he? He's already forfeited $1 million roster bonus that would have been payable week one of the regular season if he participated in all offseason workouts. So if he skips the mandatory minicamp, that's another $70,000, less than 10% of what he's already given up by staying away from the offseason program. Won't be a shock at all if he doesn't show up for the mandatory minicamp. The question is, how far will he push it? Will he hold out of training camp? Will he retire and potentially have to give back bonus money? And it's time, I think, to do the calculation. It will be in the millions of dollars if he does retire of money that he would have to give back. And I think back to Carson Palmer 3 years ago when he retired from the Bengals. He had already earned all of his signing bonus money. He didn't have to pay anything back to the Bengals when he retired. So he did retire, and then the opportunity arose for the Bengals to trade Palmer to the Raiders, and it was a great deal for the Bengals. I think it made Mike Brown the executive of the year for PFT purposes that season, getting what he did out of the Raiders, along with drafting Andy Dalton and A.J. Green earlier that year. But will Andre Johnson do that? Will he give up, in addition to the $1 million in roster bonus that he's forfeited by not showing up for the offseason program? Will he give up $10 million in salary that he would earn this year by not showing up? And at some point, will the Texans blink? Well, because I think for now the Texans look at it and they say, we understand Andre Johnson. We've had him in the building for 11 years. We know how he operates, and we know when it's time to play, he's going to show up and play. My understanding is he's committed to his position. And with each passing day, with each missed activity, and with his mandatory minicamp coming up this week that he will not be at, most likely, it becomes more and more clear to the Texans that they had misread Andre Johnson, because they haven't done anything to replace Andre Johnson. They didn't draft a receiver. They didn't sign a veteran free agent at the position. I think the Texans firmly believed throughout the offseason that Johnson will show up. Once they recognize he won't, then that's when Plan B begins to be formulated. And my understanding is there are teams out there that would be interested in Johnson if he's available in trade. The question is, will the Texans decide, you know what, we better get what we can out of this guy because he means it. He's willing to not take $10 million this year. He's willing to walk away from the game. He's willing to never play again if we don't trade him. And once the Texans come to that conclusion that Andre Johnson means it, then that would be the point at which they decide to get what they can and move on from Andre Johnson. It's amazing that one hasn't gotten more attention, I think, because we all assume he'll eventually show up. I think it's time to assume otherwise, and it's time to presume that at some point the Texans are going to have to make a big decision. And some sad news over the weekend, out of the blue, because in his illness, in his final illness, Chuck Knoll, the Steelers Hall of Fame head coach, was as private as he was throughout his career. One of the great football coaches of all time passed Friday night in his home at the age of 82. He had some horrible back problems. He had an undisclosed illness. And he passed in his sleep. And look, I grew up in the shadows of Pittsburgh, 60 miles away in the 1970s. I didn't know much about the Steelers before Chuck Knoll, because he arrived as the head coach in 1969 when I was 4 years old, and I had yet to really pay much attention to the NFL or anything else in 1969. All I ever knew was the Steelers were a good team. All I ever knew is they were a contender, and all I ever knew is they were a champion. And it's amazing when you consider how bad that team was for its entire existence before Chuck Knoll arrived, and how he changed that organization top to bottom. Current team president Art Rooney II, the grandson of founder Art Rooney, said that he brought in a winning attitude that transformed the entire organization. That hiring of Chuck Knoll, who was their choice after Joe Paterno, that ended up being one of the great hires in NFL history and completely turned around a franchise and set a standard for winning that we haven't really seen since to the same degree, and thanks to free agency and the salary cap, we'll probably never see again. Four championships won by the same coach in a six-year window, and it could have been more. It could have been five. It could have been six. And the Steelers' dominance had a lot to do with the NFL that we now see, because former Commissioner Pete Rozelle hated the fact that it came down to the Steelers every year, and that the Steelers, by being the best team consistently, made the NFL a lot less interesting because other teams really didn't have a chance. They do now, and I don't think we will ever see. I don't care how good the Seahawks are now. I don't care who else emerges. I don't think we're ever going to see the kind of dominance that we saw in the 1970s from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when you consider the impression that Chuck Knoll made on a wide variety of people, they don't get any different from Terry Bradshaw to Tony Dungy, and he had a huge impact on both of them. When I'm with Tony Dungy at NBC during the season, there's a story or a lesson from Chuck Knoll that he relays that is translatable to today's NFL. And the way that Chuck Knoll conducted himself, that got through to Tony Dungy. That shaped the way he coached and those principles. Just keep it very simple, blocking and tackling, basic, simple football. That was the way to win back in the 70s. And as we saw this year, even though it's all pass, pass, pass now, the simple stuff, blocking and tackling, playing good defense, creating good openings on the offensive line, that's a way to win football games. And Chuck Knoll will be missed. And I know everybody around here, and I'm still 100 miles away from Pittsburgh, but it impacts a lot of people, a lot of Steelers fans, mourning the loss of Chuck Knoll, one of the greats of all time. When we come back, we'll be talking to one of the great young running backs in the National Football League, DeMarco Murray of the Dallas Cowboys, Pro Bowler in 2013 with over 1,000 yards. He's got some other stuff going on unrelated to football. We'll talk to him about that. And then we'll talk to you. It's time, as it always is this time of year, to answer your questions here on PFT Live. First day in the new studio. It's a little toasty. I'm in kind of an attic studio. So we'll see how much of an Albert Brooks flop sweat I get into as the as the show unfolds. We'll be back with DeMarco Murray. Stick around. This is PFT Live. Cowboys running back DeMarco Murray had a breakthrough season in 2013, 1,121 rushing yards, 5.2 yards per carry, and a Pro Bowl berth to cap things off. And he joins us now. DeMarco, congratulations on the great season. Tell me the biggest factor in having that stellar campaign last season.
I think it started with the guys up front, from the offensive line to the tight ends, and we even got better, blocking downfield with the receivers. So definitely got to give credit to those guys and, the success that Romo had, passing the ball, so it was a great year for the offense. Definitely got to get better.
And what do you do specifically to improve in 2014 on what you were able to do last year?
I think we got to continue, definitely run the ball and be better in the play action game and be more, continue to, protect Romo, let him have time to throw the ball and that'll open up the run game if he's having success in the passing game and vice versa. So, we'll continue to work on the little things and make sure we're all on the same page.
There's been a lot of discussion about Tony Romo's health. He's coming off his second back surgery in 2 years. What percentage do you put him at right now based on what you've seen from a health standpoint?
I'm not Romo. You got to ask him that. So I'm not sure how he's feeling and things. I mean, he looks good. So you got to ask Romo and the trainers that. I'm not I can't put a percentage on something like that.
How are you feeling after a season in which you started 14 games? You've had that injury-prone label get thrown on you from time to time. What do you say in response to that, and how do you feel right now heading into 2014?
I feel great. Had a really strong, off season with Coach Wojcik. Got stronger and faster, so feeling good. And OTAs went well for myself and the team. We're continuing to get better every day and trying to compete. And got mini camp tomorrow, so we're excited about that. And feeling great though.
We've got some questions for you from Twitter, and at Mrs. Rags asks, did you do any specific training to reduce chances of injury for this season? Any specific target training that was done?
Just the same thing that I've done, throughout my career is yoga. I've done a lot of flexibility things and, just eating right and definitely, working out hard in the weight room and making sure I'm mentally, physically, prepared to, run all day and give some punishment, take some punishment. So, getting strong in the weight room was definitely an area that I wanted to, continue to get better at.
It's only been 3 years since you were a third-round pick of the Cowboys, and you were the sixth running back taken in the 2011 draft. You've had the best career, though, out of any of them. How much motivation do you get from the fact that other guys at the tailback position were taken before you?
It's always motivation, whether it's them or just, individually, you always want to continue to get better and strive to be the best you can be and help your team win. So there's always motivation, whether it's stemming from that or stemming from your own personal goals and things that you embark on. So, that really didn't play too much of a factor, but, continue trying to, be the best player I can be the best running back I can be is always factors into that.
You had 214 carries last season. What's the ideal number of carries for DeMarco Murray?
I think whatever they give me, there's not a set number that, I'm looking at and I don't put a set number on myself that whether I can handle this or handle that. I mean, I can take and handle whatever they give me, whether it be, I don't know the numbers, but whatever they want me to do, I'll do.
Would you prefer being a year in and year out workhorse with a ton of touches and maybe having a shorter overall career, or being part of a rotation and knowing that you'll be able to play deeper into your 30s and maybe even beyond 35?
That's something that I never think about. I'm not looking at 10 years down the road. I'm looking at now. Trying to get better today, trying to help this team win. It's all about just team. Give yourself a chance to, be the best you can be and help the team, get as far as we can go and meet our goals.
How much more pressure do you feel this season, given Tony Romo's back surgery, given the changes on defense, the injuries on defense most recently to Sean Lee? How much more does that put on you to have a big year?
I think there's always pressure on everyone to perform at a high level. I mean, I think pressure brings the best out of competitors, brings the best out of, the greatest players and greatest teams. So pressure isn't bad. It's a good thing. And But, you know, like I say, Sean Lee not being there is definitely a huge blow for us. But, you know, we have the guys that's working hard to step up and, you know, take over that role. So, you know, we'll see what happens on that side. But I think we're playing well. We've had, great OTAs. We've had 10, and, you know, we're heading strong to minicamp.
You're at the point in your career where you're eligible for a new contract. What kind of pressure, if any, is your agent putting on the front office to take care of you?
Yeah, just like I said, you know, not something that I'm concerned with. I'm going to continue to work hard and play the best I can play and let things take care of itself.
The running back position has changed in recent years to the point where Ben Tate, who played for the Texans and is now with the Browns, has said if he had to do it all over again, he'd play safety. Do you look at how the running back position is treated in the NFL and wonder maybe I should have played a different position?
Not at all. You know, I love playing running back. You know, that's the position that I've played my entire life. And, you know, not a lot of people can do what, you know, the running backs can do. And, but I definitely think it's one of the most important, you know, parts to, you know, winning and things of that nature. So I don't think it's maybe it's decreased in the you know, financial field. But, you know, overall, as far as being the most important thing or it's been one of the most important things to win games, winning championships. I think you got to put that up there in the one or two category.
Well, I know even though you play one professional sport, you've got a high degree of interest in another sport, MMA. Tell us what you've got going on with EA Sports and how it relates to MMA.
Yeah. The new UFC game is coming out tomorrow. So teamed up with EA and UFC and, you know, help launch the game and you know, bring some awareness to how great it is. It's, you know, been a fan of the UFC for quite some time. Been, you know, playing the UFC game since college, and it's great. It's definitely transversed over the years, and I'm excited to be here. Excited to team up with EA, and I'm happy to, you know, be able to play the game today and hopefully I can beat, you know, John Wall and Condit, you know, a little later. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, when I first saw the press release, I saw something about you actually fighting Kiko Alonso. And Cowboys fans probably had their hearts skip a beat when they saw that, but you wouldn't actually be fighting anybody, right?
No, they couldn't give me enough money to step in the octagon.
Well, we appreciate you taking some time to step into PFT Live, and we look forward to talking to you down the road. All the best moving forward, and congratulations on a great 2013 season.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. There he is, DeMarco Murray. And when we return, it's your chance to ask me some questions. I just asked a few to DeMarco, some information out of him about where the Cowboys stand entering 2014. We'll see where you stand with your questions. Dial up 888-237-5269. We'll be right back to take your calls and answer Twitter questions. This is PFT Live. PFT Planet time, first day in the new studio, and the monitor's a little farther away, so I'm going to have to squint to read these tweets. First one comes from Xbox 360 TK1387. Hello, product placement. What do you think the Browns' chances are this year in the NFC or AFC North of competing for the playoffs? Well, look, every team has a chance to compete for the playoffs. And every year there's a team or two or three that turn it around. In 2012, three of the worst six teams from the year before made it to the playoffs. Last year, the 2-14 Chiefs from 2012 made it to the playoffs. It's not out of the realm of possibility for the Browns to make it to the playoffs. However, there are easier divisions to be in if one wants to turn it around dramatically. They've got to deal with the Bengals and the Ravens and the Steelers, and they may be starting a rookie quarterback, or they may be starting Brian Hoyer. Who knows what will happen with this Cleveland team? The defense had some punch, but yet another coaching change. Question marks at running back, although Ben Tate believes it should be an exclamation point at running back. He believes he's the guy. What happens with Josh Gordon? Will he be there? Will he not be there? It's a lot to ask for these Browns to deal with the fact that the other three teams in the division were all at or above 500, meanwhile the Browns 4-12 yet again. So, look, can it all fall together just right? Sure, why not? Because we've seen it happen before. But I think it would be a little bit risky to predict a playoff appearance for the Browns in 2014. Best case scenario, be the latest AFC North team to get to 500. 8-8, good progress for 2015, and then you try to make your push after that. But again, crazier things have happened. Something far less crazy. Another question from Twitter. This one comes from IDK Josh 7777. Where's Brandon Flowers heading this season? Please say Cincinnati. Well, look, Flowers, Brandon Flowers, the former Chiefs cornerback, unexpectedly cut, although not really. People thought it was coming. There had been rumors it was going to happen, and it came down to dollars and cents. And the new regime there, 1 year into their time, Coach Andy Reid, GM John Dorsey, decided the time had come to make a move, and really doesn't do the guy much of a favor because it puts him out on the market well after that free agency money has been available. But it looks like there's going to be a little bit of a boomerang. Looks like there's going to be a little bit of a competition. Vikings reportedly have made the phone call. There are reports that up to 10 teams have called. The Falcons very interested in Brandon Flowers. Assistant GM Scott Pioli was the guy who gave Brandon Flowers his big contract in Kansas City. All comes down to dollars and cents, comes down to cap space, and it all comes down to what Brandon Flowers wants. Does he want to go play for a contender? Does he want to get top dollar? He already got that big contract, made about half of it in a couple of years in Kansas City. What is his objective? What's his priority? And look, I think anything other than getting paid every dollar you can is a foolish factor. And I know everybody wants to go to a contender and try to win a Super Bowl, and that's great. But there's no guarantee that any team is going to make it to the Super Bowl or that any team is going to win the Super Bowl or even get to the playoffs. So many things happen. It's a team sport with 11 guys on the field at any one time, an injury here, an injury there, and what looked like a sure thing ends up being anything but. So the only sure thing is money in the bank. Get paid while you can because you can only play in the NFL for so many years. So Brandon Flowers' best move, go out and get as much as he can from whoever is willing to give it to him. Dan in Brooklyn, willing to give us a few minutes of his time on PFT Live. What's up, Dan?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First time, long time.
Thank you, buddy.
So I'm calling today because, I'm looking at this AFC East division. It's looking strong, but I think the Bills can pull this one out this year. I'm feeling positive.
Well, that's good. And look, thank you for your call. 0-0 goes a long way toward making teams feel like they can pull it out, although the Bills, another team in the AFC East, where every team in their division was at 500 or better, although they were 6-10 instead of 4-12. Can they close the gap in 1 year? Defense could be better with coordinator Jim Schwartz taking over for Mike Pettine, the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I think it's going to be a tall order, though, for the Bills to climb all the way to the top. Could they steal a wild card berth? Sure. A win here, a win there. Next thing you know, you're in the conversation. They got a lot of eggs in the Sammy Watkins basket. They got a lot of eggs in the E.J. Manuel basket. There's a lot of incentive for C.J. Spiller, who's in a contract year, to have a big year at running back. This could be the last year for Fred Jackson. Yeah, there's, for every team, including the Raiders, almost, there's a way to connect the dots, and there's a way to see this thing fall together that the team gets to the postseason. Yeah, I think it's possible for the Buffalo Bills. It's possible for everybody, and that's why we love the NFL. Any given year can be the year for any team, even the Raiders. Kind of. Back to the phone lines. Taylor in Texas. Welcome to PFT Live.
Hey, Mike. I want to ask you about the current value of inside and middle linebackers. You and the PFT crew love mentioning how bad the market has become for running backs, with kickers making more on the open market than top free agent backs. Do you see inside and middle linebackers becoming as devalued, considering how often teams use the nickel formation now? Or do you think great linebackers like Luke Kuechly and Navarro Bowman can keep the position's market high? Thanks.
Well, and thank you for the call. And the key is, can the great linebackers stay on the field for every down? That's the key to getting paid as a linebacker. If you're the one guy who doesn't get sent to the sidelines when it's time to go to the nickel or the dime formation, and the key is going to be mobility. Remember a couple of years ago, Ray Lewis showed up for training camp looking like Michael Jackson in the Thriller video with the, you know, the sunken cheekbones and the big eyes because he'd lost all that weight because he wanted to be able to run with the tight ends. That's the key. Can you deliver the big hit and also be mobile enough in pass coverage where you stay on the field when linebackers otherwise hit the sideline? Otherwise, you do become interchangeable. And I remember Jimmy Johnson back in the 90s with the Cowboys. Guards and linebackers, in his mind, were interchangeable. And when you become a player at an interchangeable parts position, you are quickly spat out and you are paid not very much because the thinking is there's someone else out there who can do exactly what you do for a lot less money. So the key is the ability to stay on the field every snap, every circumstance, every down. If you can do that, you're going to be very important to your team's defense. And if you get injured and are out for the season, like Sean Lee of the Cowboys, it's going to make a huge impact on the ability of that defense to be as good as it can be. Another phone call. Gunner in New Hampshire, welcome to PFT Live.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about Tom Brady's status as an elite quarterback when it comes to wins versus personal statistics.
Well, I thank you for that perspective, and he addressed the question himself within the last week or so. What statistic is the most important for a quarterback? Tom Brady's response was, you mean other than wins? And even then, quarterbacks get way too much credit for victory, and they get way too much blame for defeat. But who on the football field has more of an opportunity to impact the outcome of the game than the quarterback? And Tom Brady's numbers are still good, but I apply the eyeball test. I apply the crunch time. I don't care about stats when it comes to what a guy does when the game is on the line. And I know this is not a popular viewpoint in New England. It's definitely not a popular viewpoint with my good buddy Tom Curran of CSN New England. But when I think back to Super Bowl 46, I think back to the game on the line. I think back to Wes Welker wide open. I think back to the ball not being thrown between the 8 and the 3, instead behind and above Wes Welker, forcing him to contort his body at full speed, and ultimately he dropped the ball. If that is delivered Joe Montana style between the numbers, just like he did between the 8 and the 0 in full stride to Jerry Rice, Tom Brady's got that fourth Super Bowl ring. And really, ultimately, that's all that matters. But this is the 10-year anniversary of the last time Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. It's amazing when you think about it that he's still playing at the highest of levels, but has yet to get back to the Super Bowl and win it in 10 years. Amazing to think about that. And it's been a Hall of Fame career, first ballot, no question. Where does he rank among the best ever? Where does he rank among the best in the game? He still is among the best in the game now. The question is, how much longer will he play as his skills begin to diminish, and how low is he willing to tolerate going on that 1-32 ranking of the top starting quarterbacks? Is he willing to play as long as he can, even if he's the worst starting quarterback in the NFL? I don't know that it ever comes to that, but this guy wants to play until he's 43. Hard to think he'll be the best quarterback in the NFL when he's 43. Back to the Twitter bag. Question from at Stylo706. For 3 years, sports media have predicted the Bucs are a dark horse for the playoffs. Is there any reason to believe it this season? Sure there is. Just like there's reason to believe there's a chance the Browns and the Bills and everyone else except the Raiders can turn it around. 0-0, plausible hope, making big changes in the offseason. We've seen the Tampa Bay Buccaneers do it this year. New head coach, new GM, new attitude, big receivers, Mike Evans in the draft, all those guys they picked up in free agency. Josh McCown taking over quarterback, even though the quarterback of the past is the quarterback of the future, but Mike Glennon isn't the quarterback of the present. I'm a little confused about all that. But I think the Buccaneers can make some noise in a very good NFC South division. Who knows where the Falcons are? Now, I think it's more aberration than trend when you consider what happened to the Falcons last year. The Saints, I believe, will continue to be one of the best teams in the NFL, underrated and overlooked by most. The Panthers, ready for a dive. I think the Bucs can get to the wild card, and maybe, just maybe, they can surprise the same way the Panthers did last year. Did anybody really expect the Panthers to be the number 2 seed last year? No. So, can the Buccaneers do it? Yeah, and let me tell you, if the Buccaneers turn it around and become a playoff team in Lovie Smith's first year, the franchise that fired Lovie Smith a couple of years ago, if they don't get to the playoffs, and I'm talking about the Chicago Bears, you're going to start feeling that thermostat turn up for GM Phil Emery, because he's the guy who gave up on Lovie Smith, and there's a chance that the Buccaneers will be the latest team to show that they can go from worst to first. And that's been a trend over the last decade or so in the NFC South. Fourth place team ends up more often than not winning that division. All right, last call for the day. Francis in Paterson, New Jersey. Welcome to PFT Live. What's up, Francis?
How you doing? I wanted to know if you think Tom Brady will win the Super Bowl this year.
Well, thank you for the call. And I appreciate the intense interest in Tom Brady today. I don't know if the Patriots are good enough to win a Super Bowl, and it's not because of Tom Brady, it's because of the rest of the team. We had an item earlier today based on an article from Jeff Howe in the Boston Herald, how Brandon Browner has been brought in to play corner along with Darrell Revis. The idea, be more physical. That's the key to win the Super Bowl, not just to get there. And I know this whole Denver-New England thing is going on. Are the Broncos so much better than the Patriots that the Broncos are a lock to go back? Well, both teams, Denver and New England, are thinking, how do we match up with the best of the NFC? and the best teams right now in the NFC are physical. So Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, trying to get back to the days where you have the corners who will push and pull and tug and mug opposing receivers. And the Seahawks have figured that out. They figured out how to cheat, air quotes, technically cheat, and get away with it. Look, it's not a penalty if they don't call the flag, if they don't throw the flag. And last year, a lot of the discussion was about how the Seahawks' defensive backs continuously violate the rule against contact beyond 5 yards, but they recognize that the officials are not going to slow the game to a crawl by throwing the flag every time. So you do it over and over again, you get flagged once in a while, you ultimately are ahead of the game. I feel like that's where the Patriots are going this year. And if Brady continues to play at a high level, if they can get him some help at receiver, if they can get him some help at running back, those may be big ifs. But the defense could be better, and it could be good enough that you put it all together, they get back to the Super Bowl, and maybe with the experience and with an increased degree of physicality, maybe the New England Patriots can celebrate 10 years since their last Super Bowl with their next Super Bowl. And anytime Tom Brady's asked what his favorite Super Bowl ring is, he says the next one. It's been a long time coming. Maybe this year will be the next one. We'll see. We'll see what we have in store tomorrow with another edition of PFT Live in my new attic studio where it is 98.6 degrees. I have managed to not sweat too badly. We'll try to cool it down a little bit for tomorrow. It'll be hot tonight on Pro Football Talk on NBCSN. Prime Number Series continues, number 56 and number... Wait, 56 and 94. Significant debates coming up about the best 56 of all time after Lawrence Taylor and the best 94s currently wearing that jersey. No Hall of Famers wore number 94, in part because Charles Haley has been kept out of the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about whether he should be in there. We'll talk about all sorts of other stuff. Hines Ward in studio. Bob Glauber in studio, our good friend from Newsday. Full hour, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time tonight on NBCSN. Check us out around the clock at profootballtalk.com. See you back here again tomorrow.